Welcome to the Humanist Union of Madison, our monthly meeting, and our presenter today is Susan Hagstrom, and her topic is James Dobson, Why His Group Focus on the Family in Dangerous America.
Okay, first of all, I am basing this talk on four things. First of all, the text, the book James Dobson's War on America by a former colleague of his who worked for him for about 10 years. Various articles from the Freedom From Religion Foundation and Americans United from Church and State. And my stepmother put me onto rightwingwatch.org, which is a very good website. Jane Dobson's initial organization, Focus on the Family, was founded in 1977. Barry Lynn's organization, Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, lists FOF as the second biggest earner of the religious right in 2006-07, only Pat Robertson's Christian Broadcasting Network raking in more money. 2006 revenue, according to AU, was $156,972,266, not small change. Today, FOF's broadcasts are heard on more than 5,500 stations in 155 countries, reaching around 220 million people daily. FOF also took control of the Family Research Council in 1988, now separated, which, among other things, runs the yearly Values Voters Summit, the get-together of all the religious right, people. I have a copy of AU's reporting of the October 2010 summit. If you want to take a look at it, I'll pass it around. I became interested in Focus on the Family when reading about the Freedom From Religion's lawsuit regarding the National Day of Prayer. I admit to my own mind that I was perplexed how anyone could defend it, considering the discriminatory and definitely abridging the separation of church and state. The history. It was passed at the suggestion of Billy Graham. Introduced to the Senate by Absalom Robertson, father of religious right extremist Pat Robertson, who uttered the mental twister reasoning of, quote, the corrosive forces of communism which seek simultaneously to destroy our democratic way of life and the faith in an almighty God on which it is based, unquote. At first a floating date, in 1988 it was fixed to the first Thursday in May, initiated by a co-founder of the Campus Crusade for Christ, and in 1989, ta-da, the National Day of Prayer Task Force, run by Shirley Dobson, the wife of the founder of Focus on the Family, housed in the Focus on the Family headquarters, creates templates for the National Day of Prayer proclamation for heads of state and federal government to use. Presidents, governors, and other public officials have often used the National Day of Prayer Task Force wording or themes, according to FFRF. The website for the task force is red, white, and blue, with many U.S. emblems in the background. Very patriotic looking. And they say it's not discriminatory. Okay, I am passing out two examples, sorry about the small print, of articles that you'll find if you go on the Focus on the Family website. One, I think my spouse is addicted to internet porn. How can I help him? For the past 4 weeks, there's been a variation of this article on their website. Seems to be a hot topic for the group. And one, teaching teens the life skills of renewing their minds. Starts off with a quote from Romans. Sorry about the small text, that's how it came out on a printer. And this is what the average viewer sees when they get on the home website of the Focus on the Family. Despite Dobson's recent so-called retirement from FOF, he still deals with a lot of work there, they provide an example of the biblically oriented self-help to be found. The mission on their web page is, quote, for over 30 years, Focus on the Family has provided families in need with biblically based parenting advice, help for hurting marriages, and the good news about God's unfailing love. His breakout book was Dare to Discipline, revised in 1996, which, despite advocating corporal punishment for children at a time when it wasn't a popular idea, was a bestseller. In his book, The Strong-Willed Child, Dobson draws an analogy between the defiance of a family pet and that of a small child, and concludes that, quote, just as surely as a dog will occasionally challenge the authority of its leaders, so will a little child, only more so, unquote. While not reading all of his books, there does seem to be a common theme of raising respect for authority as a primary family attribute, the family being the traditional Christian two parents, children. That's what that focus on the family started out as. As his former colleague puts it, their initial goals were to strengthen the marital and parenting abilities of their status through a biblical perspective. Respectable on the face of it, and though I might not like it, what can you say? The problem for us, though, is they applied the best of marketing techniques to the business, and it was a business. They would air topics and writers on their radio broadcast, and at the end of the show, announce something to the tune, for more information on X, call said phone number, email at, etc., etc. Often they would end with a phrase similar to, for a donation of X, we will send you, etc., etc. And as you know, then they catch you. Your information is collected, stored, and used. So, when Dobson decided in 1979, 2 years after the start of the organization, that he simply had to attend President Carter's White House conference on the family, despite the fact that he wasn't invited, he had a ready-made constituency. And yes, I'm using that word on purpose. 80,000 people wrote to the White House after receiving his cry of alarm on the air that only secular humanists and liberals were invited, and that it was important that his listeners demand the good point of view to be heard. And shortly after, he was invited to the conference. Honestly, I couldn't swear to it, but I think that may have been when the ultra-conservative religious extremists learned the value of marketing. And he's probably the top marketer in the business, if you ask me. This is probably the number one danger of the focus on the family. Though numbers achieved on mailing, replies to concerns for help, going to the point of telling couples in crisis to attend a biblically vetted psychologist in their neighborhood, and generally portraying themselves as the friendly neighborhood talk show, the minute the political side of Dobson asks for help, 500,000 to 1,000,000 letters, phone calls are made to politicians in a matter of hours. Anyone would have to admit that gives them at least some clout. The number two danger is what I call perception versus reality. Guess what's been reported as Dobson's favorite genres on books on tape? There's no time for reading. He's a big CEO. You know, you can't possibly pick up a book. Well, it's war history. Not bad in itself, but then you have to consider his choice of language when arousing his group to action. For his retirement speech, quote, and now we are absolutely awash in evil, unquote. Quote, don't you want to shore up the shaking foundations of a society that may collapse without us and your donation, unquote. Quote, we are an ordinary people trying to deal with incredibly powerful and dangerous institutions, unquote. And then, quote, babies are dying. The very definition of marriage is under attack. The financial underpinnings of families are being destroyed by confiscatory taxation. And children of all ages are being taught wickedness and every form of godlessness. This is no time to grow timid, unquote. Yes, he pretty much talks to his constituency with that language almost all the time. And then there are the Dobson's reactions to those, shall we say, on the other side. Example one, Dobson scored an interview with serial killer Ted Bundy on the eve of his execution. They took communion together. At the interview, Dobson raised up the evils of pornography, getting Bundy to agree to the evils. Bundy said, pornography can reach out and snatch a kid out of any house, unquote. Dodson used this interview until too many sources pointed out that Bundy was a pathological liar and had rarely, if ever, mentioned pornography as an influence until that time. However, Dodson would use this as a slippery slope morality argument. Look, you read a Playboy one day, you murder the next. Until then. And my book here argues that he stopped more from the argument that it was distasteful to profit from the interview of a serial killer than for any other reason. Like, good science. Example two. As you can imagine, Dodson and Reverend Barry Lynn, head of the American United for the Separation of Church and State, are not two individuals who see eye to eye. At the time of this example, Barry Lynn was representing the ACLU at the Attorney General's Commission Pornography during the Reagan administration. Lynn's objective at the commission was to urge the commission not to recommend government actions which infringe on the freedoms of adult citizens. What Dodson quoted in one of his books was, quote, Mr. Lynn sat with a straight face and told us it was the ACLU's position that the sale and distribution of child pornography, once it is in existence, should not be prohibited by law. The author of my text, a former colleague of Dodson, says it better, so I'm going to read a passage from it. And here is where Dodson's Street Fighter approach to social intercourse leaps into view. While testifying on behalf of this broad basic precept, the adults should choose for themselves. Lynn was asked by Dodson to articulate for the commission the ACLU's position on child pornography. It was Dodson, not Lynn, who introduced this subject. And the question was not how Lynn himself saw the issue, but how the ACLU saw it. The distinction is important because it happens that Barry differs with the ACLU's perspective here. So committed is the ACLU to fighting censorship. The organization extends its opposition to government controls, even to mere materials containing child pornography. Lynn, however, believes such materials should be restricted and even attempted to change the ACLU's position without its success. A pretty much example, he twisted Lynn's words to say, get the effect he wanted to from his constituency. Example three, Dodson's description of Supreme Court Justice Kennedy after the ruling that struck down the law against gay sex in Texas. He said that Kennedy was the most dangerous man in America because of his determination to rewrite the Constitution. Didn't come correct. The other factor in the perception versus reality is the use of Dodson, by Dodson, of the psychologist, he has a degree from Southern California, versus the religious broadcaster theme. FOF is tax exempt for religious purposes. It is a corporation with a 18-acre campus and over 1,000 employees. The line between donation and purchase of educational materials, unquote, is pushed very thin through repeated requests for more donation. It's kind of a version of public TV, you know, where you donate X amount of dollars, you'll receive some token. But where if the donator sends in less than that amount of money, FOF will repeatedly mail them until they actually cough up the remainder to get the whatever they wanted. Dodson also then turns around and uses the radio broadcasts and mailing lists from FOF to push political issues. He has been very careful not to do the one thing that would get him in trouble, which is political endorsements. However, when he sits down with politicians and the media, not his listeners, Dodson, for most of his professional life, emphasized his psychologist degree. But when he gets sued for employment discrimination or practices crushing what he sees as competitors, up pops the religious aspect again. He has actually managed to avoid La Susana's employment discrimination by claiming religious aspects. Mm-hmm. So he's always within the bounds of the law, but morally, he... finally, his actions politically. One, FOF has created a massive database of, shall we say, sources of political attack machines in the form of people. Two, he helped found the Religious and the Family Research Council, home of the Value of Voters Summit, the top political get-together of the religious right. It is technically separate, but... Three, together with other religious right, he helped found the Alliance Defense Fund, the group that helps to sue for any considered discriminations against Christians. Four, he created Freedom Focus on the Family Action as a separate entity from Focus on the Family to work on political issues. Five, after retirement, he starts radio broadcasts called Family Talk with his son, and despite its nonprofit status, has been using it to promote social political issues. Bachman, Santorum, and Gingrich have all been glowingly portrayed on this radio broadcast. Six, he has joined with United in Purpose, dedicated to working with politicians to get more conservative judges in every level. I would like to close by mentioning Dobson's religion and aspects of this on his behavior. He is a member of the Church of the Nazarene. The author of this book, and it is a former colleague of Dobson's, describes this religion as, quote, those who believe that instantaneous crisis religious experiences are very important. Those rock your soul emotional happenings, unquote. He describes it as a religion that ranks its sins. Problem is, any religion which is so cliche into enumerating sins, according to the author, ends up being very judgmental about anybody else's sins as well. I regard it interesting, based on what I read, that Dobson ended up being able to work with groups from other conservative religious groups. In the book, in 1988, when they were basically getting started, he would not work with Robertson Reed, considering them bad Christians, basically. Whether that evolution is good, in that they have to band together to survive in the national arena, or bad, in that they are getting together for more impact, is debatable. And then there's always the money. Billions will have an effect. What questions?
Question about Focus on the Family Action. Is that a non-tax exempt?
Yes, that's a political group.
So they can endorse candidates?
Oh, yes.
Have they endorsed anyone in the presidential Republican primaries?
They started off with Gingrich, and I think they've gone to Santorum now.
You say they're not taxed because they claim to be a religious. I thought it was a church. You wouldn't get taxed if you were a church.
They're probably a...
But they're not a church.
They claim they're
probably a 501c3.
501c3, yes.
Yeah.
It's a religious organization.
Same as,
they're taxed
as Freedom from Religion Foundation. They're an educational nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they can't endorse either.
No, they can't.
But they could be a not-for-profit and endorse. They just aren't taxing them. Their contributions aren't tax deductible.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's why they have separate groups for those.
Yeah.
So FOF has a separate organization. I mean, Sierra Club and various other organizations have their own action, which are legally separated somehow or other.
Planned Parenthood does that too.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. They've learned all the techniques.
One of the things that happened a few years ago, when it appeared that the religious right was not going to take over the country, some of the leaders, and Wyrie was one of them, decided, okay, if we can't hit people head on, we'll end up with basically a parallel system, which includes as it has come about, it includes their own law schools, there are massive media, which Dobson is a major, major part of, and it's under the wire in terms of people that aren't connected with it. We don't hear the media, we don't see it here. In some places, that's maybe all you can get. They are blanketing not only the country, but the world. Bringing children up in separate schools, just paralleling the governmental agencies, public schools, etc. That has happened, they've got some pretty smart people doing it. And by they, I mean Dobson included.
Mm-hmm.
And another piece is they're working to take over the judiciary in the country. You hear a lot about the campaign and the presidency, but there's a lot going on. The conference is focusing on the judiciary, and the conference is focusing on family values. They're oftentimes the same group, spearheaded by the Family Research Council. At the time that they separated off, the Family Research Council separated off, they did it to save focus on the family, its tax exempt status. But as Dobson himself has said, we are still brothers in Christ, or something to that effect. And so they're still just like this. One is an arm of another, even though legally they are they're clearly separated, and they know the law. They know exactly how far they can go. But Tony Perkins in the National Research Council has been one of the entities that's been sponsoring the Justice Sundays, in which they make it very clear to constituents who they want as Supreme Court justices. But they're not only working on the Supreme Court, they're working on multiple levels of the court system. So again, you've got this parallel efforts that are trying to not only Christianize, but make conservative the courts. And the amount of money that's going into some of these that is not necessarily from religious right people are extremely wealthy, but they also have other backers, and I'm not going to go into that, but there's people ever since the 70s, some very, very wealthy people in the country have been backing it. So it is a coalition between, as a tripartite thing, between the preachers, the politicians, and the financiers, and some of them are all of the above, but this piece of it is extremely influential.
Well, that's sort of explained why Obama has not been able to get his judges confirmed, and there are a lot of vacancies that are still vacant because he can't get his judges through.
And it explains, I think, and I don't know the enormity of the voting. I think it might be close to a third of the country that is at least sympathetic with the Dobson types. But there is this is one of the reasons that the Republicans have leaned farther and farther right, is because there is a big voting bloc. They weren't successful in getting a Republican into office in the last election. They seem to be doing a rather pathetic job of it this election, and time will tell as to what's going to happen. But it's not going to stop them. These people they regenerate in different ways. There is a theme of the same people that have been at this kind of Christian government takeover since the late 60s, early 70s, and as they get older, you know, the bodies have changed, but the goal has not. And, you know, there are different organizations, different media, different this and that, but it's been a consistent goal that's been going on for some time, and they're getting much better at it. And with the help of people like Dobson.
Yeah, and that.
But isn't we stuck with cable?
Yeah. It could very well be.
It seems to me that perhaps the humanists have a role in this, but I'm not sure what. I think the real role is the liberal Christian denominations need to counter Mr. Dobson and his colleagues. I can't see a humanist. Well, how can we, other than, and so I'm stuttering here, but I think the point is, what are the liberal denominations doing? I think that's perhaps what humanists should do, urge them to say, okay, this stuff is dangerous.
I'm blocking the name of the liberal Christian political organization that is really is fighting this very hard. Who can help me with that?
Well, the state separation people.
Well, that's one.
Americans United. Americans United.
That's a very important one, but this is a different one, and I'm they are.
There's Interfaith Alliance, but I don't know if they're.
I think that's the Interfaith Alliance is one.
That's with C. Walton Gatty.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what he runs.
Yeah.
That was
what about
one of
the National Council of Churches? What did they say?
Well, they are condemned by the religious right, so that tells you something. I think they have a hard balancing act.
Don't you think, though, that more liberal churches have a handicap, and maybe we could think of a way to overcome it? The further right you go, the more, quote, godly you get, and the more we hear about God. The further left you go, the less we hear about God, and that is exactly the complaint of the right. You know, you start having a certain kind of government, you start having a godless one. You start looking at certain liberal principles like, you know, not climbing into people's television and telling them what they can watch. And again, you're getting away from God, and that's a slogan that they can focus
on.
Well,
they particularly have singled out secular humanists.
Right.
I mean, that's in a lot of the literature.
Mm. We're dangerous.
Yeah, we're bad guys. Despite the fact that I think we and liberal Christians and moderate Christians, although we may have a different belief system in some respects, have an awful lot in common in terms of how we want our country run.
That's what I don't understand. I was listening to Stu Levitan on the way over here, and he was reading about Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from a Birmingham jail, and one of the things he talked about is, where are the moderate Christians? That's what he wanted to know. And he said, we can't do this without, you know, the middle. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me like a lot of people, they just either, I don't know, they either don't care or they won't get involved. I've always been just astounded by the wacky crap that we hear from Pat Robertson and even from Dobson. Where are the other ministers that stand up and say, they're crazy? Yeah. This isn't the way we are. And defend the middle ground of the probably a much larger group of people, but these people dominate.
Yeah, nothing personal, but Barry Lynn is a reverend, and
right.
If they see what happens to him from these guys, that didn't work.
Well, persecution is persecution, and if it's happening from your, it doesn't matter what side it's coming from, you need to stand up against it.
You saw it really work beautifully when early gay rights movement here in Madison, and I think a lot of people here probably witnessed that, when a few liberal ministers started speaking out, and then finally
it went to the middle.
There was a real concerted effort with gay organizations and churches ranging from liberals to moderate that said, we've had enough of this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same kind of effort that I think is needed now.
Maybe we need to consult with the gay rights people and see how they manage to get this help without poisoning water. Because if our overt public support might be a handicap to the liberal denominations.
I think one of the reasons, my feeling, one of the reasons that there's so much
not just power, but continuity with the current situation is, if you read the thing that went around for young people, and I mean, when I was growing up, I had friends that went to all different churches, but they also all went to the same public school, and there were sports and activities and things that you mixed with everybody. And if you have people, neighbors and friends that we were close to, they have Christian ball teams, Christian, it's like Girl Scouts, but it's not, Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, soccer teams, prayer groups, everything. Their children are never, they have their own schools. They are never in the public arena to hear other people's thoughts and ideas and opinions. They're very compartmentalized. And I think that these young people, when they get to be in their 20s, or start with a point where they're really starting to make political decisions, they only really know one way. The way they know is you look in there, tell every one of those. Sit down with your kids every day, ask them these questions, ask them if they're doing this, ask them if they're doing that, tell them they need to do this and that. And they don't grow up free thinkers, they don't grow up well aware of the many things that say compare them to kids that go in UU. Our whole emphasis is to get kids to know what's out there, what all the opinions are, what all the options are. And these kids don't have that.
That's part of the handicap.
And they're voters. They're voters right now. Our main voters are kids who have been raised through this past 10 or 15 years of education system, and I can see why they're not having any problem getting followers.
We've got three states right now that want to go back to teaching. They have legislation. Missouri, Indiana, and New Hampshire, and they want to teach creationism. We're back to Dover again. It's ridiculous. And they are succeeding in getting this stuff passed through.
Oh, yeah.
Because they all have Republican legislatures.
And they're getting books banned. I mean, it's the whole big circle. I think the difference now is there's such continuity in young people of having limited thought.
But that's the goal.
One of my daughters is in Iowa now, which is kind of in the heart of the Midwest, is continually appalled that she goes, I have a hard time meeting people who have a philosophy on life, who really, you try to talk to them about what they think, and they just say, they either get scared or they say they don't know. But she said it's a very, everybody kind of thinks the same thing. And
I draw a line between thinkers and believers.
Oh, yeah.
You've got people that you know, free thinkers are, they're raising their children to actually be critical thinkers, where believers don't want thinkers.
Right.
Once you get to the point where you can think in a church, you're lost.
Yep.
That, you know, that's the one thing. I mean, I know that from my own religious upbringing and getting to that point where you're no longer willing to reconcile those two different aspects of your brain.
But there's a lot of strength there right now. Voting strength.
Number of people like you who they've gone through that and they've shared it. And every month in Free Reclaim, you'll find articles about people. Well, great. And this is when the turning point occurred. And kids are bound to rebel in one level or another. We raised our kids to be free thinkers, and we have three fundamentalists. So there you go.
If you let them make the decision.
Yeah. Well, but look at all of the recovering Catholics we have.
Yeah.
Catholic Church is bleeding parishioners.
The
blood of Christ.
Oh, it's some scandals. Upsonites.
I'm sure there have been some.
Let's say a CORE, for example, or to in all of the kind of the free thinker groups in the area, were to get together with the campus groups and sponsor a widely advertised free thinkers forum on campus, what would be our means of distributing that internationally, such as Dobson can do? Yeah, you can put it on the web, and somebody may pick it up. And I noticed that one of the panel that you and Galen and I did, I think on humanism, and then there was another one that I did, that now it comes up in Russian and Japanese and all kinds of things. It's widely spread. I know that may be one Japanese person and one Russian, you know, but it's out there. But that's not the same as this network that is a deliberate network of distributing information. I don't think that the left wing, if you will, or the moderates have that same kind of media distribution.
You don't need it. If you have the internet, the internet is basically owned by atheists. Atheists don't have gathering spots. Where did we go? We don't have buildings. We don't have churches. The young people are finding each other and all these various Facebook, you know, all these blogs and stuff out there.
But is that going to be, well, Netroots, I suppose, comes pretty close to also being developing an information base and voting base. But where do you get a voting base?
She's making a point with the media thing. In this book, there's a whole chapter how at the start of his career, he takes one moderate Christian's writings, and because he doesn't like what it says on it, basically, she's boycotted by the rest of the people who print out books. Booksellers. You know, for the rest of her life. He basically says, it's my money, so...
I'll publish.
So nobody else... So I'll publish what... You publish what I want, or you don't publish my stuff. And with the marketing, he's got 80 million people. He just says, oh, I'm writing a new book, and then 80 million people buy the book.
Sure.
So this is why this guy has a personal fortune. He keeps all the money from his books, not focused on the family.
But that was the way, I mean, he started in 1977. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the way to do things back then. Things are moving way too rapidly now to even, by the time you
That's
have a
true.
Mailing put together and you send it out, time has moved on.
Yeah.
Young people have moved on. They're not...
These guys are on the web.
I know, but I mean, that's where the presence is. You have to build a presence on the internet. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Jessica Ahlquist. She's a 16-year-old student in a high school in Rhode Island, and she complained about a prayer in her gymnasium that had hung there since 1963. And they asked the school if they could just take out school prayer and Heavenly Father and Amen, because the rest of it was actually pretty secular, about getting along, being good losers, whatever. And the school refused. The ACLU took her case. They went to court. She won. Okay, she won her case. And this is a massive banner that, you know, it's like floor to ceiling on there. And the vile things that students have been, I mean, threats, physical threats with their names. Now, there's a new thing in Rhode Island called a cyberbullying law.
Yeah.
So these kids learned a lot about the civics lessons in the last week. They learned about the First Amendment, and now they learned about the law. And the police are looking into it, and they can all be arrested for their threats.
Good.
But this is how fast things are moving, especially in this younger group of kids. And she's her Facebook page went from 1,000 to over 2,500, like overnight, of people that liked her page. This is how rapidly things are changing nowadays. And if you want to hit young people, this is where you have to go. You know, I don't know how. I mean, it's the next YouTube. You go to YouTube and something, you know, some new thing, and it'll have 150,000 hits overnight. You know. That's where you're at. Being able to get.
Well, that's true. I'm just sort of saying that these guys, when it comes to the moderate Christians and stuff, they are going to do as much as possible to censor them, based on this book and.
Oh, you mean
like
the moderate? Them censoring the moderate Christians?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how you get people off the dime. That's the only thing. You've got people that are active on one end, and then you've got this massive thing. I just read an article about. How did the right, you know, become so stupid? And it was Nixon. It was his Southern
strategy.
He went into the South. He took up all of the cultural issues like abortion, separation of church and state, women's rights, you know, all those things, creationism, all that, evolution. And that's where they actually...
That was part of the coalition with the moral majority. And,
right. But that's how they... That's what they made their cause, and they haven't really dropped that. And it's still... I mean, you can actually sit and talk to these people, and they say, I don't want my kids learning evolution in school. And you just want, you know...
Yeah.
You can't believe that people in 2012 don't want their children to learn science.
It's
basic science. And we're not talking about, you know, deepest Mississippi here. We're talking about New Hampshire.
That amazed me. I never thought of New Hampshire as being that conservative. But what's the historical? Is there a historical reason for that?
I think New Hampshire was the Tories and the Romans.
Yeah, they're the live free or die, or don't tread on me, or whatever they're.
Even before that was
Threatening to secede from the Union.
What a national group was sort of dominant in the settling of New Hampshire.
It's not a very urban state, and I think that has a lot.
It's a small state, too. It has 4 million people.
English conservatives.
But a very conservative English.
Growing up in Vermont, it was always dueling. These were dueling states on every possible level. Like Vermont, I mean, New Hampshire doesn't have a state tax, so anything you buy, there's no tax. So, I mean, all there is between them is a river and a bunch of bridges. But politically, it was always going. I mean, you've got the extreme in Vermont, it's always going back and forth. Those two states were.
The part I haven't been able to figure out is that because they just had the Republican primary there. Vermont is 50th in church attendance and New Hampshire is 49th. And I kept hearing this all the time. Oh, so Santorum can't possibly use his religion crap on these people. They're too smart. They don't go to, you know, the whole religion thing is not. But then you see where the legislature is voting through this kind of bizarre, you know, strange. I mean, I don't understand how they reconcile the basis for what they say the people actually stand for and then who they have elected to be in office.
It's because the religious right controls the primaries. They've recognized that primaries just don't interest voters. Mm-hmm. And so they can nominate people. I mean, they're the ones that control who the parties run. Mm-hmm. And so they have a disproportionate influence because of that. And you know, they're well-oiled discipline group, their people go out and they vote. I understand.
Well, that's the biggest issue. I mean, I just found another thing about this big evangelical rally they're having down in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the New York Times today. Yeah. And Seeking Unity, they're back in Santorum.
Yeah.
I mean, the man doesn't believe in birth control. I mean, who can vote for that?
Yes, but anybody who wears a sweater vest on.
One cheering thought.
That's what Gilmar said.
One cheering thought. Is that Mississippi rejected personhood.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but they want to bring it to Wisconsin now.
Well,
and we've got a crackpot lieutenant governor who's just as bad as the governor.
How many children does Santorum have?
He has 8.
I have some suggestion. How about recruiting some of these conservatives with a hyper-conservative organization that would discredit them? Like flat geocentrists who think the world is flat, but think we're the center of the universe. And since we can't get some wayward conservative priests to do our work for us, maybe we could set it up with a spurious organization to attract some of them and get them discredited.
From what I can tell, I've never seen a group. I'm on the Freedom from Religion Foundation's Facebook page. We get trolled all the time by Christians, and I've never seen a group that's more proud of the fact that they're stupid. Seriously, they come there and they know nothing about the Constitution. They don't understand separation of church and state. They think we're trying to inflict, you know, our religion on them, and they. When they talk about creationism stuff, they're actually proud of the fact that they don't follow science. So I don't know.
No, but if the creationists are actually embarrassed by the fact that there's a
conspiracy.
So if you
we can actually get them.
To be so ridiculously conservative that to discredit, that's my point. But speaking of the internet,
There are some, however, who are pretty sharp at mining U.S. history and for what they want, and coming out with very, very cleverly put together textbooks, etc., on U.S. history
and
the Christian nation. And we can't discount these guys.
At our peril.
They're doing it very cleverly, they're doing it very well, and they're influencing an awful lot of people to believe that our whole nation, I'm not saying there weren't a lot of God believers in our nation, but that was not what the final people who ended up doing constructing our Constitution was trying to tell us. They saw the dangers
of
true believers.
People were being killed in England and Europe on about their religious beliefs, so it was a very determined effort to separate.
Yeah.
The Massachusetts Bay Colony killed Quaker missionaries that came from Massachusetts.
Yeah. Well, that was the other thing. When they first came over here, they were as intolerant as anybody could possibly be.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Yeah, so maybe just.
So I think that was.
People who got that part right.
Yeah, that was the part that I think it was more so, not only the fact that they came here for religious liberty, but that once they got here, they were, you know.
For their religion.
For their religion.
Yeah, I have a really good quote that's by David Silverman from the American Atheist, and it's like, you know, if there's, you know, the coming Christian theocracy, you'll never be Christian enough because there's going to be somebody out there with a different version of Christianity that doesn't jibe with yours, and you're not going to be able to say anything because you didn't defend the separation of church and state when you had the chance. Because I don't understand why religious people do not understand that the separation of church and state gives them the right to pick their own religion and go to wherever they want.
That is a recent thing, though.
The strongest supporters of
freedom from religion. What's his name?
Dan Barker. Yeah.
Thank you. Dan Barker had a talk in December, which is part of this thing. And part of the talk was basically that at the beginning, the people that were making lawsuits to get Bible readings out of the school were not atheists. They were Roman Catholics, to be quite honest.
Right.
So it's just recently
that's because
they
were using they were using a different Bible that they didn't agree to.
So I mean that's one way to get more moderate Christians and stuff to get sort of on the bandwagon for the separation because these guys want their religion. That's one of the points I was making at the end there. Dobson, at the beginning of his career, would not talk to Robertson. Considered Ralph Reed, throw him in the trash.
Yeah, Ralph Reed's a
snake. Now he's going around talking. I mean, he's got this United in Purpose that the leader put me on, and he's going around talking with all these guys and sort of ganging up together. Whether that's good or bad, who knows.
You were asking about, where are the moderate Christians in this? Can we get them involved? A question I have is, where are the moderate Republicans who are letting their party push these people forward?
They're extinct.
I grew up, I knew lots of people that were Republican.
My parents were Republicans, they voted for Eisenhower.
Who supporting these people. Mm-hmm. But I don't hear anybody in the Republican Party say, what the heck is going, why do we have this group of people who don't represent us running? They've got to be, there has to be somebody out there. I mean, Ron Paul is the closest to anybody who seems to have the ability to think.
Buddy Romer's running for president, but nobody knows about him.
But I'm surprised that.
But that's because the Republican Party is not sponsoring them. Like she said, they have their agendas, and if you don't follow their line of what they want, you don't get any support from them either.
Well, Grover Norquist has kept their feet to the fire with his taxes. Anybody, any Republican daring to vote for taxes on the wealthy will get all of those billions of dollars against him in any campaign. They're terrified to cross him.
I know, because they work for themselves and not for their constituents. Gary Johnson was the governor of New Mexico, actually completed two terms, Republican. He's the only one on the right that's for women's choice. And he's Lutheran, but he doesn't think that we're a Christian nation. and which Ron Paul does. If you've ever read Ron Paul's letter to that we're a Christian nation, and I think he, most of his ideologies come from that fact that he's a Christian first and foremost. If you're going to let women die because you won't give them an abortion, I think you're evil.
I wasn't saying Ron Paul's.
Yeah, I know. I know what you're saying. But yeah, but I mean, even then, they don't actually agree with Ron. I mean, he's an anathema to them. They don't support Ron Paul.
I was talking about complete sentences, more versions.
It's a new kind of mafia when you think about it. You know, we sit around having fears about the war against crime, and some people really promote anxiety about that. But what about this kind of war, the war against opening your mind? In any way, I think our hope is with those between about 10 and 25. I think past that they get so fixed you're not going to budge them. And they won't listen. And they won't talk about it. Now look at us. We sit around and we're fighting to talk. And that will always be the case. The same is true in our church on Sundays. But you talk to a lot of people whose positions are very conservative and always have been. And you get this sort of bland smile, I know what I know, and they blow you off. But someone mentioned, was it you, Rose? Someone mentioned about the adolescent having to rebel against something.
No.
And if, yes. And if the adolescent has had a closed mind kind of upbringing in a small town where everybody he or she knows has always been of more or less the same religious persuasion from the butcher to all of his or her teachers, family, relatives, and comes out into the world, the thing you need to do, and you mentioned this, Zolita, is tantalize his or her interest, be seductive about it, they don't mind being seductive about it, and get them to forums where you bring them out gently. You don't swamp them, overwhelm them, put them down. You try to get them to talk about what they believe, because as Maylianne apparently pointed out, they won't talk about it, but they are allowed to talk about it at home, or only in very limited ways. If they have a situation where someone says, well, okay, now what did you just say? Now where did you get that? Where in the Bible, where from whom, whatever. Oh, well, that's kind of interesting. Now what about this idea which doesn't go with it? Let's talk about this. And while they're still malleable, otherwise forget it.
I'm concerned about the current political climate here in general, political climate in the whole country now. National, for example, nationally in Wisconsin, where the Republicans have majorities in both houses, and voters blocks and absolutely refuse to vote for, the Republicans have refused to vote for any bill suggested by, supported by the Democrats and so on. But I observe this same sort of thing this last week at the hearings I went to in Wisconsin. On Tuesday, the Assembly Committee on Natural Resources, and Thursday, the Senate Committee, both chaired by Republicans because they have a majority. And I sat through, in each case, about 3 to 4 hours of testimony from various absurd people who were very, some of them very good conservationists, including and Wetland Association. And my point is that the Republicans on the chairs and the other Republicans on those committees sounded very, very reasonable in all of the questioning and all of the discussions. It was fascinating to listen to all this, because there are lots of complications, right, ins and outs about the making the DNR's regulatory codes on wetlands work. Everybody seemed to be favor of that, including all the Republicans. And yet, nobody I've talked to suggests that there's any possibility whatsoever as to what the outcome will be when these come up for the vote, because they're going to be voted on party lines, period, no matter what the logical arguments are for and against the various provisions.
But you know what?
And these bills have been written almost 100% by the Builders Association, by the Manufacturers and Commerce, the agriculture people, all the people who will make money by destroying wetlands. That's the bottom line. Mm-hmm.
But there is just a glimmer of hope, I think, with the recalls going on, that there are some Republicans who are wavering from the party line. So I don't
know
if
it's... Hope.
That's our hope.
As long as we have a vote and election system where you have to have a certain amount of money in order to get it even on the ballot, mm-hmm. And they know where their money's coming from. That's the groups who are the United Against Citizens United, I think, is a very important organization. And if we're going to fight any of this, I mean, there's got to be a change in how we elect our officers, our officials.
John.
Easier said than done.
Speaking of elections, have you heard about the campaign finance reform that they have in Maine for 15 years? And something like 93% of all the statewide elections have accepted public financing
in Maine.
And one of the provisions, it's about $200,000 for the assembly person in Maine, is public financing. One of the provisions of the law is that if your opponent has not accepted public financing, the state will reimburse you for 3/4 of the excess that that your opponent spends above the $200,000.
Wow.
And ordinary people have been elected to office in Maine without big backing, and the majority of the elections are won by these people. I wasn't going to get personal about it, but maybe it's time I can mention it if you don't mention any names. I personally financed a reporter to go with a tape recorder and interview people in Maine, and he's about to go public with these things.
Speaking of hopeful signs, the student group on campus, Atheists, Humanists, and Agnostics, as of yesterday, had 900 students on their mailing list. So they've been growing steadily.
I have some more optimism for you. I've had a website for about 10 years. And a year or so ago, I found out how to find out how many hits I was getting. My entire year of 2010 was average of 225 a day. And that was quite encouraging to me. It was 250 pages of single space typewritten stuff about the truth as I see it. And apparently the people who are hungry for somebody who can speak the truth, at least most of the time.
As we conclude, I was wondering if anybody was thinking about going to the Reason Rally in Washington, D.C. in March. It's called the biggest such gathering so far by freethinkers. It's going to have Richard Dawkins, everyone from Richard Dawkins on to down to a blogger from Romania.
Do you want a final comment about Dawkins?
Yeah.
Perhaps the most engaging bumper sticker of the country it was seen in Colorado, and it says, focus on your own damn family.
Well, let's thank our speakers, Susan. Thank you, Susan.